Abolition today.
To the Prisoners Digest International, which was the collective that I was a part of at that time. And it, I wrote it after the prisoners at McAllister, Oklahoma burnt that prison down. I republished it on my blog last year when Atmore, Alabama went up in flames. It breaks my heart that we're still doing that work, that they're still fighting, that they're still burning those places, and we have taken so long to get to where we are now. But it is an incredible moment in history that we are here now. There are a lot of people here who've been doing this a long time, and there's a lot of young people here who are picking up the torch to carry on.
They ain't never made no secret about who they are and what they are. The real question is, what are we going to do? Who are we? What do we stand for?
Yes.
How much are we ready to fight and stand up for what's right for ourselves? That's the issue.
Change your mind. Stop calling it the thing that it is not. It's not mass incarceration. It's not all those things I mentioned before. What is it?
Slavery.
What do we want to end?
Slavery.
What are we fighting?
Slavery.
You might be right. You might be wrong. You might just think your life has gone on for too long. Your knees get weak.
Yes, it do.
Your heart grows cold. You're tired of doing everything that you're told. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's almost dawn. Stand up and be strong. Find a brand new song before they're gone. Stand up and be strong.
If you live in the hills,
if you live in the hills,
take too many pills.
Oh, too many pills.
'Cause you lost the thrill against your own will.
Stand up and be strong.
Yes, sir.
Amendment, which allows them, see, everybody else can read that statement. Everybody can read the statement, and it says clearly that for the punishment of a crime, they can turn you, they can place you in prison, but it also says that they can turn you back into a slave.
When the war is too long, and your rights are all wrong, when they
Abolition. Abolition.
You just heard a clip from August 19th, 2017 at the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March featuring Rebecca Hemsley, the late Rebecca Hemsley, attorney activist, Ramona Africa of Move 9, Max Parthas, and Yusuf Salam of the Central Park 5. And that was followed by Prince, Stand Up and Be Strong, off of his new album. Peace and welcome to Abolition Today, a weekly syndicated online radio program with a specific focus on modern slavery as it is practiced through the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and by for-profit prisons worldwide. We air live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, and 4 Pacific. Live streams and archives podcasts are available at abolitiontoday.org. Abolition Today is also available on all major podcast platforms, and it is simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Yusuf Hassan. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Max Parthas. Peace, Max.
Peace, Brother Yusuf. I am here at the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center in Sumter, South Carolina, and I'm feeling some kind of way, man. You know, just hearing that song and remembering the day, August 19th, 2017, and the amazing things that happened that day, the catalyst of much of what we're doing right now started at that point, working with inmates on the inside who were organizing a nationwide prison slave labor work strike, the biggest in history, and also organizing for 20 cities across the country, including D.C., who all had marches and rallies. It was just amazing to see it like that. I think that was the tipping point for a lot of people.
Absolutely. It seemed like just yesterday we were there. So it was just a great memory hearing excerpts from that day. So last week we examined, as Frederick Douglass said, you've seen how a man was made a slave, you'll see how a slave was made a man. And we revisited the Slavery Abolition Act of 1883, its historic legacy, and provided insight into the real reasons for the abolition of the triangle slave trade controlled demolition. We incorporated incredible music and poetry mixes to move the soul and body with tracks from Snoop Dogg, Slick Rick, The Poppy Family, Prince, The Untouchables, Kegel Soul, K.O., and Mark S.X. And finally, we heard the tale of Frederick Douglass's struggle with the slave breaker, Mr. Covey, at Mount Misery. So you definitely want to check out that. If you missed out on last week's program, you can tune in to abolitiontoday.org, or again, you can go to any of the major podcast platforms. So a week before the August 28th March on for Voting Rights rallies, tonight we'll dig deeper into voter disenfranchisement. How, why, and who? Welcome to America, where you have to pay taxes but can't vote, where a single criminal conviction can turn you into a non-person with no rights or protections. We're also only a week away from the anniversary of the Abolish Slavery National Network. In a single year, we've made epic accomplishments never seen before in history. We've successfully changed three state constitutions to remove slavery exception clauses, organizing over 30 other states to do the same within the next 4 years, and introducing a joint federal amendment to counter the slavery exception clause of the 13th Amendment. For the first time since Reconstruction, slavers have to defend slavery for everyone to see and hear, which they have done in Tennessee and Louisiana, where state senators publicly presented their defense for keeping slavery legal. ASN core leadership members will be speaking during the massive national marches in D.C., California, and Texas. Dennis Feeble in Washington, D.C., Savannah Eldricks in Texas, and along with Jamelia Land, Abolition Today's host, Max Parthas, and myself, yours truly, Yusuf Hassan, will speak in Sacramento, California. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. We count 10 million violations of the 15th Amendment against 10 million living citizens due to conditions of involuntary servitude. When is enough enough? This episode of Abolition Today begins that critical conversation. So before we start, Max, tell us about your week, brother.
Well, there are dates that I do want to remember, and the week has been pretty hectic, but, you know, we're coming up on the wire with all these anniversaries. A couple of them I want to mention right away is, of course, it's the anniversary, 50th anniversary of George Jackson's assassination. That's the first thing. Also, of course, the August 19, 2017, Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March on Washington, as we heard in the opening track. And it's also the anniversary of the assassination of Kajame Powell. Kajame Powell martyred himself, and more people should be familiar with his story. We'll share the video of the moment and how it happened and why he did it on our page. I don't want to take up too much time and tell the story. I just highly suggest that you go check it out so you can understand the sacrifice that this brother made, so we can understand the circumstances that we face right now. And as you mentioned, we just passed the anniversary of the abolition of the triangle trade in 1834. So it's just so much, man. It's so much. And I'm looking forward to the people that we're calling in today. We got a number of callers on the line. Please press 1 if you have a question or comment, if I invited you to come in and speak today. That way we know it's you. We have people who just call in to listen, and they don't want to talk, so their phone numbers are up there, but press 1 so we know it's you, all right? I know at least 3 of them are going, you better know my damn number,
right.
My heart, Max.
Exactly. And for those who've forgotten the number, they may be listening and want to call in. It's 515-605-9814. Make sure you press 1 on your dial so you can become in, and you can be added to the queue of those who want to speak.
Well, I think I know one of these numbers by heart. So let's go ahead and start by opening up this line. 3453, you are live with us on Abolition Today.
Hey, Brother Max and Brother Yusuf, it's so good to be back here. For those who don't recognize my voice, my name is Kamal Allen, lead organizer with the Abolish Slavery National Network. It's so good to be here.
My
yes,
brother
sir,
Kamal,
Brother
man.
Kamal, Brother Kamal, great hearing your voice, man.
52 weeks
good
later.
Hearing your voice, too.
A year ago, August 23rd, that we heralded the Abolish Slavery National Network's coming. You know, like, here it comes, y'all. And here we are a year later, and you already heard just some of the credentials that we've dropped. You know what I mean? Like, we've done much more than that. We've helped and participated in changing the state name of Rhode Island from Rhode Island Plantations to just plain old Rhode Island. We helped to restore voting rights with Florida citizens and a number of other initiatives that we put our hands on and tried to push forward. And it, we would like, as a matter of fact, we had a show called The Midas Touch because everything we did was successful.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, Kamal, tell me, man, look back now. You the lead organizer for a year. Tell us a little bit about that.
Man, this has been a worthwhile journey. You know, so I, just for the audience to know, I helped to lead the Abolish Slavery campaign in Colorado in 2018 through my work at Together Colorado. And when we were successful in passing this abolition amendment, we got a lot of calls from folks who had been doing this for a while, folks who have been wanting to do this, you know, wanting to do this in their own states. And you know, people who were already doing this in their own states, like Brother Dennis Febo was already on his way doing this. Brother Max and Brother Yusuf, y'all have been doing this since long before Colorado even dreamt of an initiative to abolish slavery. And other amazing organizers from around the country were beginning to take action or to ramp up their action on this very important issue. And so, we decided that we would all get on a call together around, I would say it was like late May 2020. It was around the time that George Floyd was murdered by Derek Chauvin. And we got on the call. Initially, it was just to introduce ourselves and just to say, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm from this state. This is what we're doing. But we found over the course of that meeting that that space was sacred, the voices at the table were sacred. And what we all collectively recognized was that there was no organizing body in this country whose purpose was what we eventually put together after that day, which was the Abolish Slavery National Network. We decided to officially become an organization that is dedicated to making sure that we do this thing from every state and from the federal constitution. Man, from that day to the first August 28th kickoff to now has taught me so many valuable things about abolition and about us being a flagship organization on this issue. I'm not saying other organizations aren't taking leadership that far exceeds what we've done so far, but when it comes to taking the language out of the Constitution and finding a pathway for what happens next, I would say that ASNN is absolutely taking the lead on that. And so many valuable things have happened. We've learned so many valuable things. We've come together as a team through our ups and our downs and, you know, recognizing the challenging road ahead. It has been a worthwhile journey is all I can say.
Amen to that, brother. And I'm glad that we had the chance to walk next to you with that happening. All the way through everything, from even getting the fiscal sponsor, which is March On, who is also hosting the March On for Your Voting Rights event that's coming up this week, where we'll be participating. We've been working side by side with March On Foundation now for a year, and that's been a fulfilling relationship as well. And I believe that they're very proud of the accomplishments that collectively the ASNN has achieved. And we haven't done it alone because, you know, we're just like the core leadership, right? But we're working with dozens and dozens of other people working just as hard as us on their individual state constitutions and bringing all of that power together. So it's beautiful. We got another caller. Let me go ahead and bring them in next. 4711, you are here with us on Abolition Today.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. It's Jamelia. How are you?
Hey.
Hey.
What's up, Jamelia?
All right. Sister Jamelia Land of
It's a family reunion.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Kamal. How are you?
What's up, Jamelia? I'm good. How you doing?
Trying not to melt in the California heat and trying not to black out from the smoke from the fires that the California keeps putting our incarcerated firefighters out here to fight.
I'm appreciative of the way you're able to compartmentalize today, Jamelia. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to be spending some time together in the next week. You, myself, Tribal Rain, Yusuf Hassan is going to be there as well. And I've got a crap load of family out there. So you're going to be seeing a whole bunch of twins of me.
I'm looking forward to it. They're all abolitionists, right?
We're working on it.
We can kick off an abolitionist party.
we'll kick off an abolitionist party, no doubt about it, man. You just left California, Kamal, right?
Yeah, I was in San Diego about 2 weeks ago.
Awesome, man. Jamelia, let me go over to you. Tell us a little bit about what is happening next week with March On, because a lot of our program today is in support of that. It's, you know, voter disenfranchisement, the efforts that we're making with an intention to reach out to those 100 million people who never actually vote and give them a real reason to vote. And March On is also fighting against voter disenfranchisement by the GOP right now. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, Max. So as you know, March On, we are a C3, C4 organization. We are actually the original founders of the Women's March. And this year we have partnered with the Drum Major Institute, which was originally founded by MLK, now being run by his son, MLK III. So we partnered with Drum Major Institute, NAN, FBIU, as well as the Abolish Slavery National Network. I want to give us a shout out on that side of the house because we are also official co-sponsors of the national movement that is happening around the country now. And so we are having five flagship states that will be participating. That is Arizona, Texas, although D.C. is not its own state. It does not have statehood. Washington, D.C., Arizona, and
Atlanta.
The other one just completely. Thank you. As I was say, the other one just completely evaded my mind, right? Yeah, and so then we're also doing sister marches. And so I'm doing the sister march here in California. As of this morning, we had 485 people that are registered to attend, and the numbers keep increasing. NRF this year is March on for voting rights, because as we see that there are voter suppression legislation that's popping up all over the country. Well, let's just be very frank and honest. A lot of it has been in direct response to the Republicans being upset that their orange chief of chiefing is no longer in the office. Yes, I called him the orange chief of chiefing. I don't know if that's a legitimate language
Cheeto
or not,
chief.
But I said it. Cheeto chief. There you go. Yeah.
Cheeto chief.
The tangerine tantrum. And so, here in California, we are focusing on a few things for this specific march. Number one, we don't have some of the most egregious type of voter suppression laws that we're seeing pop up all over the country. But what we are dealing with here in California is we are dealing with a recall. So our governor is currently under recall. We have people who are now newly enfranchised to be able to vote from the successful passage of Proposition 17 last year. And so because we are also running ACA 3, which, by the way, we go to appropriations this upcoming Friday. So we're really
awesome.
Excited about
That's
that.
Right.
Yes, we're going to the Assembly appropriation this Friday. And so, you know, we've got a lot that's going on here, but ACA 3 is also a part of what we're working on here, and why it's so important for us to get people registered to vote, specifically the formerly incarcerated population, because ACA 3 directly impacts them at some point in their life and where they have dealt with incarceration. And so, you know, it's a lot going on here. We're really excited about this march. And one of the highlights of the march is that we are going to be celebrating the one-year anniversary of Abolish Slavery National Network. And as you heard from Kamau earlier, you know, it has been it's been an unprecedented year. And we have done some amazing work throughout the country. And so, you know, it's going to be a celebration of a variety of different things. We're really just tapping into the people and getting them to understand how important it is. You know, as some of you know, we've talked about this before. Unfortunately, when we start talking about civic engagement in our communities, very specifically within the African-American, Latino, and lower-income demographics, we don't talk about civic engagement or voter registration or voter rights, usually unless it's a presidential election year. And for most of us, it's like, which of the lesser of the evils do we choose? But what we aren't educated on is our city, local, even down the school board elections, right? And how these are the important parts of what's happening in the community. And so we have we have two candidates that are very progressive that are running for the district attorney seat that are going to be out. We've got a couple of senators and assembly members and a host of other speakers that will be coming out. So we're excited and we're looking forward to it. I personally am looking forward to the 29th. Looking forward.
Amen. The day after is always the best day. What you were saying as well, I would like to pass that over to Brother Kamau, because it is the anniversary of the Abolish Slavery National Network, and we do have something special lined up for everybody. You know, in addition to speaking at these major rallies on the anniversary of the March on Washington and the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King Jr., we'll be doing a live digital presentation for the Abolish Slavery National Network. You want to tell us a little bit about that, Kamau?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to back up really quick. We, as the Abolish Slavery National Network, we chose August 28th as our day of launch last year. And the reason why we chose August 28th was because it has been and continues to be a historically significant day in Black American history. That on this day, Emmett Till was lynched on August 28th. Of course, the March on Washington of 1963 plays on August 28th. Hurricane Katrina made landfall on August 28th. And then Senator Barack Obama, later President Barack Obama, accepted the Democratic nomination for president on that day. And we chose August 28th to commemorate.
And don't forget the abolition of the triangle trade, the triangle slave trade. That was August 28th as well.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So we recognize this day as a sacred day, and to pay homage to the ancestors that came before us and our elders who can still tell the story, we chose August 28th as a day of action and as a day to mark. This is when we make our public launch as a national movement, as a national effort. And so in commemoration of that, next week on August 28th at 2:00 Eastern time, we will be having a virtual gathering as the Abolish Slavery National Network. This will take place shortly after some of our ASNN speakers speak at the March for Our Voting Rights that Jamilia had just now talked about. And so the goal of this virtual gathering is to celebrate a year's worth of accomplishments, and to celebrate the work that people are doing on the ground, especially in the states, especially those who are working, from the experience of having been enslaved, and folks who are their allies. And so this is going to be a really special day. So if you can tune into this, please go to the Abolish Slavery National Network Facebook page. Our Facebook event is up. That's where you will receive regular updates about this event.
I think you'll be streaming it from the YouTube page as well, right?
We sure will. I'm talking to our producer again tomorrow to work out some of the technical kinks.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, man. What I want you to do next is get into some of the history of voting in regards to the Reconstruction Amendments, right? And, you know, we pride ourselves on music and poetry here at Abolition Today, so I got to throw in some music. So I want you guys to hang out with me. We're going to play this clip on the 15th Amendment historian Yohuru Williams, and it's going to be followed by Kiki Palmer's Actually Vote. And then we come back on the other side, we're going to get into some of this topic, all right? Remember, if you do call in and you want to speak, press 1 on your keypad. The number is 515-605-9814. You're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org, with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan. We're joined presently with Kamal Allen, lead organizer for the Abolish Slavery National Network, and Jamilia Land, co-author of ACA3, the Abolition Amendment in California, and board member for March On Foundation. We'll be right back.
Abolition. Abolition.
Hi, I'm Yohuru Williams. I'm a professor of history, and here's what you need to know to sound smart about the 15th Amendment. The 15th Amendment is the last of the so-called Civil War amendments, beginning with the 13th Amendment in 1865 and ending with the 15th Amendment in 1870. The three Civil War amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, all sought in their own ways to ensure equality for African Americans in the South after the Civil War. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery. The 14th Amendment granted African Americans citizenship. The 15th Amendment outlawed discrimination in voting rights. Contrary to popular belief, the 15th Amendment does not grant the right to vote to anyone. It simply outlaws discrimination in voting based on race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Congress failed to provide enforcement for the amendment originally. Enforcement did not come until 1870 with the passage of the Enforcement Acts of 1870 and the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. Interestingly, the first state to ratify the 15th Amendment was Nevada in March of 1869. the last state to ratify the amendment, Tennessee, in 1997. Although formally ratified in February of 1870, African Americans were still denied the right to vote by a variety of means by Southern states. These included things like the poll tax and literacy tests. It would not be until the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that the majority of African Americans in the South were allowed to register to vote.
Now I know this might surprise you, yeah, you might not have heard. There's a little something happening on November the 3rd. Everybody's toasting, all political and woken, on your social, so outspoken. That's sweet, but that sweet doesn't do enough for me. Young people like to talk that big talk. Young people are the biggest voting bloc. You can only make a change if you check that damn box. We can win. Free tuition. Young people line it up round the block. Don't care if you run, if you slide, if you hop. If you just take a day and get your ass off TikTok, we can win.
Came up to me the other day and said he wasn't gonna be voting. I had to say sorry to this man. I need an educated king. Vote, y'all. Tell your mama, your auntie, your sister, your brother, your cousin, your side nigga, your side bitch. Everybody, let's get into it. Come on, let's make it trendy to vote.
Abolition. Abolition. Abolition.
I love it. I love it. I love it. You just heard the historian Yahuru Williams with the breakdown of the 15th Amendment, and that was Philip Palmer. Actually vote. You're back on Abolition Today with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan, along with Kamal Allen of the Abolish Slavery National Network and Jamelia Land, co-author of the AC3 Amendment in California, as well as a board member of the March on organization. So I pose it to you, Jamelia, first. What do you think of what we just heard?
My apologies. I'm here. So my apologies. I actually had sat the phone down for a few seconds. I was running in doing the mom thing. So I missed some, but I did hear some of the music. So, I want to be transparent. My apologies.
No, we know. We know how busy you are. You have a lot of things going on. So no worries, sister. No worries.
The historian kind of broke down the history of the 15th, 13th, 14th Amendments. He talked about the KKK Act of 1871 and also pointed out, how some of the ways they stopped this voting was through poll taxes, literacy tests. But he didn't mention a couple of other things like grandfather clauses. If your grandfather was a slave, you couldn't vote. And, of course, the exception clause, which once you were convicted of a crime, duly convicted of a crime, you were now state property and couldn't vote then either.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting with all that is the psychological indoctrination that we as melanated people in this country have fallen into believing, right, that our vote doesn't count. Well, if our vote didn't count, they wouldn't be running around here historically trying to keep us from being able to vote, and now more so, blatant suppression, And so I think that it's important for people to recognize the history of our rights to be able to vote in this country and why they are so significant and so important.
Thank you. Thank you indeed. Brother Kamal, any commentary?
Yeah. When I think about the attack on our voting rights, which our voting rights have always been under attack, when we talk about from the very moment that we gained a right to vote, they had always been under attack. And when black men, specifically black men, got the constitutional right to vote, that must have been 1880s, 1870s.
Mm-hmm.
1870. So what we saw almost immediately after that were the development of Jim Crow laws. But what went side by side with that, along with the Black Code laws, along with the beginning of Jim Crow, was the expansion of the prison industry. And the loophole for the 13th Amendment was used very specifically, very strategically, to stomp out voting rights for black men who just gained the right to vote. Earlier, Brother Max, you had talked about Amendment 4 in Florida, which passed in 2018, was the amendment that granted voting rights to people who have felonies in the state of Florida. And what we, digging into the history there and even to the present moment, that was used specifically as a voter suppression tool to gather as many black and brown people into prison as they can, both for monetary gain, for labor, but then also the suppression of voting rights. What we found was all the way up until 2018, what was it, one-third of all black men in Florida could not vote?
One in four.
One in four. One in four of all black men in Florida did not have the legal right to vote in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a very intentional mix of two of Jim Crow's oldest institutions, the suppression of voting rights and prison. And so the vehicle to bind the two of them together was the loophole of the 13th Amendment. So I'm really glad that we're talking about this topic today.
Oh, absolutely, brother. And I do want to share some information that I've come to understand about the Reconstruction Acts. We know, first of all, that Reconstruction was a failure. It allowed them to re-enslave us. As authors, like the one we quote very often, which is Jay Mancini, said that the only difference between slavery and convict leasing was with convict leasing, there were so many criminals that they were deemed as disposable. So they could just work them to death and get rid of them, and they did that. But there's some things that I want to point out about how the 13th Amendment itself negates both the 14th and the 15th Amendment. the cunning of these white supremacist slave owners was beyond belief, and the 13th Amendment's exception clause was not a one and done. This was how they did things, and I'm going to show you how that works. The 13th Amendment, which was the First Amendment, says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. That turns citizens into property because it says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, right? So now you are considered a slave, which means you're not a citizen. Amendment, the 14th Amendment in Section 1 says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States, of the state wherein they reside. Again, if you've been subject to the 13th Amendment, guess what? You're not a citizen. So you're not, the 14th Amendment does not apply to you at this point. And then to move on to the 15th Amendment, once again, there's a couple sections here, but we'll stick with Section 1. The rights of citizens. That's the first four words right there. Guess what? You're not if you have been convicted, duly convicted of a crime. You've lost your citizenship. You don't have any of those rights that are guaranteed to you. So this doesn't even apply to you. And that means that it's suppressing the vote of select groups of people based on previous conditions of servitude. So Section 15 says, or the 15th Amendment says, the rights of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous conditions of servitude. If you've been turned into property, then isn't that previous conditions of servitude? And we count as much as 10 million living violations right now. They say there's 6 million people who can't vote due to felony disenfranchisements, and I believe that is underrepresented. It's probably as much as 8 million, but let's go with the 6 million. Then you have another 2.4 million who are in prison. Now you're up to almost 9 million. And then you've got 12 million a year who go in and out of the jails, and the majority of them are not even offered the opportunity to vote from inside those jails. So we're lowballing it when we say 10 million violations that are alive right now, and all because of the 13th Amendment's exception clause. Yusuf, you want to comment on that, and then we'll pass to our guest?
I just have one little caveat that I wanted to add in there. And going into the 14th Amendment, you know, where they always find the loophole within it, it says no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So that's their way of linking it directly to the 13th Amendment, where it says duly convicted. Well, here it is where they talk about the due process of law, which we know the Sixth Amendment violations that go on, that we've covered several times, where there is no true due process. But that's their way of linking the 14th to the 13th, just with that one little phrase right there. That's all I wanted to add to that.
Words are so powerful, which is why the ASNN exists. I'll go ahead and pass the mic over to you, Kamal.
Oh, man, no, I think what y'all are saying just really speaks to the point that white supremacy is the most prolific and successful conspiracy that I think has ever existed. The meticulous planning that went into the language that we're now fighting tooth and nail to unravel is really something to, when I say to marvel at, I don't mean to celebrate, but just it's amazing when you see the scope of the fight that you're up against and how meticulously our enemies have planned for this. I really couldn't have said what y'all just said any better.
They call this spelling for a reason. Sister Jamelia?
Well, you know, I as I'm sitting here listening to you all talk, and in between breathing treatments, because we got all these fires burning outside, and I'm thinking about all of the incarcerated firefighters. Just recently here, just to show you how nasty white supremacy can be and mass incarceration and all these other things, recently California decided that it was going to renege on its commitment to its incarcerated firefighters. So they incarcerated firefighters go into a contract that upon serving, you know, they'll have X amount of time reduced off of their sentences, and then they will be released. Well, last week I discovered that due to the extent of the wildfires that we have now, California has decided that it will not be releasing any inmate firefighters. And they're not sure when they're going to lift that, but apparently preserving property, and don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not saying that we should not be preserving property and life, but at the expense of 2/3 of incarcerated. Let that sit in for a minute.
Wait, can you repeat that, please?
2/3 of firefighters in the state of California are incarcerated.
I bet it's the same in Oregon, too.
Yeah. And we are fighting massive wildfires right now. And, you know, what people aren't telling you is that we have loved ones that, and we're still in the middle of a pandemic. And so we've got men and women out on the fire lines that are sacrificing their lives, that are breathing in all of this toxic air. They're not getting any additional pay. They're treated like shit, pardon my language, by non-inmate firefighters. When they get out, they can't get jobs, they're not respected, and God forbid something happens to you, you're just another number. So if that tree falls on you in the midst of a fire and you die, there's nothing for your family. You were inmate number XYZ 1234 on to the
one
next
dies,
one.
One dies, get another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and so you know, I tend to get real emotional when we start talking about some of these things, because the digger we deep, the further we deep or we dig, we realize how deep this thing really is. Excuse me. For example, state of California, you know, not only are we one of the largest carceral states in the union, but you know, our incarceration and the money that's generated off of it isn't going to private industry as much as people would think. California, the way that it is legally structured, California's governor is a slave owner. And I say that because we have the California Prison Industry Authority called CalPIA. CalPIA is the big house. CalPIA runs all of the slave plantations within CDCR, so all of the factories. But they only make stuff for other government entities. So they only contract with the Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Transportation, Department of Environmental Services, so forth and so on, right? But CalPIA's board is structured like a corporation. Its board has a chair. The chair is appointed by the governor. The chair is also the secretary of CDCR. She is the top warden. Then you have other members who are on the board, and they are appointed by different members within our state's legislature. So, you know, a senator may appoint one, an assembly member may appoint another. So it's all this real, it's this huge government entity. California is enslaving at a mass numbers its people, and the government is benefiting from it. That's a problem.
To get back to the firefighters, though, I want to remind people, they're making as little as $2 a day and potentially one day off for each day that they're – I think it's one day off for each day that they're out there fighting a live fire. Several people have died fighting fires who were incarcerated while doing so, and they were not celebrated as heroes like firefighters. They didn't receive any benefits. They died as prisoners. And they were replaced. And we've even showed video here, you know, from our site where it was smuggled out by the firefighters themselves to show the conditions that they put them in. So it was the height of COVID. They're fighting fires, and they're going to sleep in a tent with half of them don't have masks on. It's filthy inside. They're not even allowed to wash the suit off. And there's two or three people coughing all around them. That's the conditions that they were fighting the fires in. So it's a terrible situation going on there. I want to give some more information on just how many states are affected by these civil death laws that steal people's rights. To the best of my understanding, at this point, there are 8 states where you could lose your vote permanently for life, meaning you're no longer even a citizen until the day you die. Alabama, Arizona, Delaware, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Wyoming. Remember, Tennessee was the one the brother mentioned, didn't even ratify the 13th Amendment until 1996. There are 16 states where your vote can be restored after prison, parole, and probation. That's Alaska, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Texas, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. There's 3 states where your vote can be restored after prison and parole and paying fines, which is a poll tax, right? That's Florida, Connecticut, and Louisiana. 21 states you can have your vote restored after prison. California, Colorado, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, North Dakota, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Utah, Virginia, and Washington. Now, that's the most up-to-date information that I have. If you needed to know if you are formerly incarcerated and you don't know if you can vote or not, you can always rewind so you can hear what the status in your state is. We're going to need you to vote. Particularly the formerly incarcerated, particularly the people who are affected by this system and the slave catchers who run it. This is our first opportunity in 157 years to really come out against this system of slavery. Come on.
Oh, yes. And the one thing that I want to add to that is that currently in all 50 states, if you are currently incarcerated, you are not able to vote. And if you and when and upon your release, depending on which states you're in, you may or may not get that right. So I just wanted to add that the depth of voter disenfranchisement goes not just to the folks who were formerly incarcerated, but to the people who are still serving time inside of prisons. And so I just got to reiterate that these are Jim Crow's oldest and most prolific institutions. And, you know, they have real life consequences as what Jamelia was talking about. These aren't just, you know, just numbers and facts, but these are people.
There's a human cost.
There's a human cost. Like our loved ones are not just incarcerated, but enslaved. And I know that all of us on this call right now have loved ones who are either currently serving time or who have served time.
Right.
And so we've seen, you know, what this does to a family. You know, the separation of family is real. That practice has never stopped from the very moment that our ancestors were forced into this country, forced into chains and forced to work on sugarcane or tobacco or cotton plantations. We have been fighting tooth and nail to just simply sit in the presence of our loved ones. But these yep. institutions, the ones that politically benefit others, are the ones that are hurting us still. You know, the fact that people who are serving time in prison cannot vote, they'll be counted towards a certain
gerrymandering
congressional district. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the gerrymandering is used as a tool to strip even more political power away from us while they're stripping us of our families. And so the human toll and the political toll and the toll on our families have never been separated before. That it's all a part of a catastrophe that sits on our shoulders every day.
Absolutely.
If I could jump in, kind of piggyback off something when you were talking about, you know, people who are currently incarcerated and their ability to be able to vote. I don't know what it is in other states, but here in California, which most people don't know, is that if you are incarcerated at the county jail level, you have not been convicted of a felony, you can vote from within the jail. But a lot of people don't know that. So we have massive numbers of people that are sitting in county jails waiting to go to trial, or they're there on, you know, something else, traffic violations, whatever it may be, and they have not been convicted of a felony. They can register to vote. And so something that we're doing here is that we're actually tapping in. Also in the state of California, you can pre-register to vote at the age of 16. So we've launched a campaign to start targeting the juvenile detention facilities for youth that are between 16 and 18 that do not have a felony record and pre-registering them to vote as well. So even though there are all of these things that have been pitted against us, there are still loopholes that we need to be able to find so that we can educate our people and empower them. And then the second thing is I want to kind of share something with you all. So my husband recently sent me his inmate monthly time log. And as I go through it and I look at it and I think, one, he's paid one of the highest rates within the facility, and the next pay scale jump is actually firefighters, which goes up to that $2 minimum an hour. He makes 75 cents an hour. This is what his pay stub says, 160.50 hours at 75 cents per hour. He made $120. Then they deducted 55% of that, which was $66 in restitution. He made a total of $54 for 160 hours of work combating COVID, blood spills, cleaning fecal matter from the walls, windows, doors, and more.
And you spent more than that just in communication with him, where they extorted your money.
Just yesterday.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, my son called and said, Mom, I need to go to the store. He's able to go to what they call the store or commissary one time a month. He can max spend $225. In order for him to have that full $225, I have to spend at least $575, $580 because they take 55%. So the families are paying as well.
This is one of the ways in which they keep their damn boots on people's necks. You know, I've known families who have given up their rent money for expenditures for the people on the inside and had to lose their houses and things like that. But, you know, I want to get some more into, I want to play a little bit more music and hear a little bit more words on this from some of the artists that we have available for tonight. And I also want to get into a conversation after that about the difference between felony disenfranchisement and civil death. Because personally, I don't think there is civil death. We'll get into that afterwards. So let's go ahead and play this track. You guys are going to continue to hang out with us, right? Kamal and Jamil?
Unfortunately, I have to get going pretty soon, but I will be listening into the conversation, but I do have to get going.
Should I give you a chance to say goodbye now or after the track?
Hey, let me just say goodbye real quick.
All right.
And it's not even a goodbye. It's a so long for right now.
A few words for the audience.
So I just want to remind everybody that, for one, to say thank you, Brother Max, Brother Yusuf, Sister Jamilia. It is always so good to hear your voice. And,
likewise.
Max and Yusuf, thank you for hosting this every week. This is vital information. This is the information that's needed to make sure that we once and for all abolish slavery. And I just want to remind everybody that no matter how hard this fight gets, and it has gotten hard and it will get harder, is that we have the ability to defeat this thing. We do. And the reason why I know that was because our ancestors have climbed mountains that are much taller than this, and that we are much taller than this. So with that being said, you know, just keep the fire in your hearts. Keep your, keep your eyes on the prize, and we're going to get this thing.
Amen. Thank you very much, brother. And
thank you, brother.
Please continue to listen. We got a hell of a program laid out for everybody tonight. All right, Jamilia says she's currently handling something as well, so she'll probably catch us on the other side.
I'm hanging out.
I'm hanging out. Okay. So let's go ahead and get into some poetry and music real quick. We're going to play the poet Susan Baraka, and she tells the truth about voting. That's the title, tells the truth about voting. And then it's going to be followed by a Millions Prisoners Human Rights March PSA from 2017 to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org. We'll be right back after this.
Abolition. Abolition. Today.
How do I write a poem about voting without talking about black bodies? Like, black bodies ain't the people I love. Like, Trayvon don't remind me of my nephews. Like, Sandra don't remind me of my sister. Like, George don't remind me of my daddy. Like, Elijah don't remind me of me. An introvert and different and unbelievably f***ing strong. Like, being Korean and black during coronavirus and Trump's America don't make me want to burn it all down. How do I write a poem about voting? When Flint, Michigan still doesn't have clean water. When over 5,460 children have been separated from their parents at the border, when children are being tear gassed, when children are being tear gassed during the pandemic of a respiratory disease, when children are being tear gassed during the pandemic of a respiratory disease for protesting the murder of a black man by a white police officer via asphyxiation, how do I write a poem about voting? Like the war on drugs didn't lead to black fathers being ripped from black babies, slavery. Like the war on drugs didn't lead to black bodies being stopped, being frisked. Like it don't matter if blacks live. Like the war on drugs didn't lead to 1 in 13 black Americans losing their right to vote due to a felony conviction. That was 2016.
The same year
as Trump's election. I said 1 in 13 black Americans without a vote. The same year as Trump's election. How do I write a poem about voting? When I'm sitting here filling out applications, current situation, my mother relies on me to help her save her Korean barbecue restaurant in New Jersey. She does not understand that this country doesn't care about either one of us or our survival.
She doesn't understand.
All she knows is that Shake Shack got $10 million and how come she hasn't gotten anything yet? I tell her what the SBA representative told me, that we filled out the application too early, just before quarantine when Asian businesses were already struggling because of the virus. They streamlined it since then and threw out our application without telling us.
There's nothing left for businesses like ours.
I write a poem about voting because I've applied for the NJEDA, the PPP, the EIDL of the SBA, and I'm looking for the words to say, I don't know how to help you, Mom. I don't know how to help you, Dad. I don't know how to help Trayvon. I don't know how to help Oscar Grant. I don't know how to help Brianna, Dominique, or Tony. But here I am writing a poem about voting because I know that between 2012 and 2018, over 1.4 million voter registrations were canceled. With 700,000 canceled on a single night in July. And that's just Georgia. I write a poem about voting because I know that in 2017, 99 bills to limit access to the ballot have been introduced in 31 of these here United States, and I'm looking for the words to say, if our vote wasn't important, why the f*** are they working so hard to take it away? Vote because you want to make facts facts again. Vote because the first step to co-opting a system is engaging in it. Just ask the FBI, the CIA, Justice Roberts, and Brian Kemp. Vote because when you're standing in the voting booth trying to decide between Tweedledee and Tweedledee, you'll ask yourself why there isn't a better choice. Vote because when they try to dismantle our bodies from our breath, we gotta use our voice.
There's a worldwide revolution going on. In my opinion, young generation of white, black, brown, whatever else there is, you're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
What is it revolting against? The power structure. The American power structure? No. The French power structure? No. The English power structure? No. Then what power structure? An international Western power structure.
And I, for one, will join in with anyone, don't care what color you are, as long as you want to change this miserable condition that exists on this earth. There's got to be a change. People in power have misused it. And now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built, and the only way it's going to be built is with extreme methods.
So what you and I have got to do is get involved. You and I have to be right there breathing down their throat. Every time they look over their shoulder, we want them to see us.
Once those intentions are made known, we can get to the nitty-gritty of the problem. We can get to the core of the problem. We can get to the root of the problem. And then we can correct the problem.
Abolition. 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 Abolition.
You just heard the poet, Susan Baraka, telling the truth about voting. And that was very powerful, and that was followed by the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March public service announcement. You know, so much was said just in that little short clip. Sister Jamelia, of course, I'll pass the mic to you first as well. Okay, maybe she had to take a call or something. Max?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a spoken word artist. I love poets when they break it down. Poets, I mean, you want to learn the truth about the soul of a nation, listen to its poets. We ain't got nothing to gain from lying, you know? And she broke
right.
it down very powerfully. And, of course, accompanied with the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March, PSA, with Brother Malcolm X, really saying, you know, if you know what the problem is, then you got to go after it. And that's what we're doing right now. We're going for the root of all of the issues that we deal with. This is an ancient problem. It's not a new problem. It's the same problem repackaged. Just as Frederick Douglass warned us that slavery has had many names and will have many more names. And we ought to just really pay attention to what new name this old snake comes forth with. And that's what we're here doing right now, which is why I was talking about the civil death. That traces all the way back to ancient Greece. And it's an Anglo-Saxon ideology that was brought to America. As a matter of fact, this is how it's described. With living men regarded as dead, dead men returning to life, and the same man considered alive for one purpose, but dead for another. The realm of legal fiction acquires a touch of the supernatural under the paradoxical doctrine of civil death. And that's what we're using here in this country, where people are civilly dead. They're not citizens. They're not person. They are literally state property. Jamelia, did you get back yet? No. Okay.
Well, yeah,
all
I'm
right,
here.
Buddy.
Yeah. I'm here. Sorry. I was waiting. Sam's going to be calling in a little bit, so hopefully
okay.
I'll be able to patch him in to talk with you all.
So anything on that, or you were talking to Sam at that moment?
No, I was listening to you.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to have to piggyback on Kamal. I got to apologize to you, Max, but I'm not tuning in on a more regular basis. This is every time I hear you, you know, the information that you all are sharing and disseminating with the public is something that's very important, right? Because you can't guide the people if you don't feed the people. And so it's important for people to be able to get all of this knowledge and information and understanding, and especially coming from our own people, and empower them. And so I'm just enjoying sitting here and listening to you all and always learning something new. But, you know, you got to be careful with me, because any given moment, you know, I get real volatile and, like, I'll be ready to fight.
Well, we do what we got to do. You know, we know people need to understand, and so we provide a format where they can learn, sometimes learn along with us, because we don't know it all. And we research this every week, piece at a time, so we understand more and more. I don't like to talk about things I don't know nothing about. It's just not in me. And so whatever it may be, I do the work to try to understand it better. As a matter of fact, I want to break down a little bit of what the history of civil death in the United States. And I'm going to use the Guardian's article to do it. There's an article from the Guardian. We'll share it on our page. And in it, they say, from the period of 1865 to 1880, following the Civil War, at least 13 of the United States, then 38 states, enacted broad criminal disenfranchisement laws in rapid succession. You see, immediately after the Civil War, and we already know who was targeted and why. After the Civil War, the 1867 election marked the starting point of Southern states tailoring criminal disenfranchisement laws to block black voters. Several Southern states expanded their definitions of felony to incorporate property offenses previously defined as misdemeanors. The Mississippi Pig Law of 1876, for example, broadened the definition of grand larceny from a theft of anything valued at more than $25 to a value of $10. Soon, with the rise of the Jim Crow era, black Americans' right to vote would be systemically denied through the use of poll taxes, grandfather clauses, property tests, intimidation, literacy tests, and an exception clause. And then they said from 1880 to 1900, civil death didn't only affect black Americans. Restrictions targeting immigrants, the poor, and the urban working class began to appear in the late 19th century, and almost all states with previously granted voting rights to immigrants repealed those provisions. Meanwhile, court cases continued to uphold this punishment. The Mississippi Constitution prohibited persons convicted of a particular petty offense from voting. Those convicted and disenfranchised were almost exclusively black, while crimes committed by whites, including rape and murder, did not result in disenfranchisement. The Mississippi Supreme Court defended this provision by asserting that race influences the type of offense to which one is prone. Let me say that again. That's what that Supreme Court said, that race influences the type of offense to which one is prone. That is the nice way of saying Negroes are just criminals.
Exactly.
Right? We're going to move forward to the closer to the future where it says 1980 to 1985. There's a lot more to it. I'm just picking out these little parts of it that I want to share. So 1980 to 1985, through felony disenfranchisement, disproportionately burdened people of color, the criminality aspect of civil death made it difficult for these laws to be ruled discriminatory under the Voting Rights Act. One case, Hunter versus Underwood, however, did stand out. The Supreme Court ruled that while states have the right to disenfranchise criminals, the 14th Amendment did not protect provisions reflecting purposeful racial discrimination. The decision said Alabama's law disenfranchising those with misdemeanors on the grounds of moral turpitude was a violation of the law. So even the Supreme Court saw what they were doing on purpose, and in their own words, it was to create white superiority. Yusuf?
Absolutely. And as always, the Supreme Court wouldn't do anything about it because of the Section 2 of the 13th Amendment, where Congress has to act on it. And this is why we have the proposed 28th Amendment to finally remove the exception clause and abolish slavery. Now, I just wanted to backtrack a little bit, because as you were reading about civil debt, there's something called the deprivation of political rights. And this is something that exists within criminal law within the People's Republic of China. And they list under these deprivation of rights, the right to vote and to stand for election, the rights of freedom of speech, of the press, assembly, association, and process, or of procession and of demonstration, the right to build, or the right to hold a position in state organization, the right to hold a leading position in any state-owned company, enterprise, institution, or people's organization. So we see that it falls right in line. So everyone talks about China being a socialist republic and it deprives people of rights. Well, we have this going right in line with exactly what they do here in America. Also, I just wanted to mention with that track, for those who wanted to know, that was actually from Malcolm X's speech, The Ballot of the Bullet. And we know, well, we even talk about Frederick Douglass's speech, where he talks about the three cartridge boxes, the ballot box, the voting box, or the coffin. So it all ties in together. So it was a great job in bringing that in there as well, Max.
Thank you. Sister Jamelia? She might still be trying to get Sam to call in. For those that don't know, that is her husband and the other co-author of ACA3, the Abolition Act in California, which on the 23rd is having their next hearing. I think they've only got one state to go through, and it'll be on the ballot. So if we're lucky, we can get four states on the ballot instead of two in 2021, and then have about a dozen more in 2022. That's the type of momentum that we're trying to achieve here, and I believe we can get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe it's going to get done as well.
Oh, and Sam is actually incarcerated at the moment in prison when he wrote ACA3's abolition amendment and worked with Sidney Comblogger, Senator Sidney Comblogger, in order to get this thing on the ballot as we are doing right now. We also expect him to be one of our speakers at the ASNN anniversary celebration on the 28th of August. All right, did we get it back yet? She did send me some information, which actually includes me. They are putting together an anthology called Tales from the Plantation. And Tales from the Plantation is it's a poems, essays, artwork, short stories that all are centered around modern-day slavery and human trafficking as we know it today through the 13th Amendment of our Constitution. I've already submitted five poems, which they've accepted, and tomorrow they're having a virtual presentation, an early presentation, and I get to read one of them there. That is tomorrow, August 23rd, and it's at, it's kind of a little bit of small writing here, so it's hard for me to read it. Join us for a virtual open house and toast with live readings, recordings from incarcerated artists about their works and music. Here from Jamelia Land, April Grayson, and Angelique Evans about the project and the California Abolition Act, ACA3. It's from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So 5 to 6:30 PST. We'll put it on our website so you'll have the link for the Zoom so you can check it out. All right, Yusuf.
While we're waiting for Jamelia to get back on, I just wanted to give an update on the health conditions of Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H. Rap Brown. We just confirmed, this is from the post for students for Imam Jamil, we have just confirmed that Imam Jamil has received cataract surgery in both eyes and his eyesight is fully restored. He received his surgery on Wednesday, August 18th, just 3 days after the protest in Tucson, Arizona. All of your support is in sending emails and donating to his legal defense is working. Thank you to everyone who has supported this far. We couldn't have done it without you. Until he's free, the work isn't over. The struggle continues. Continue supporting at freeimamjamil.com. If you've already completed the action items, ask your friends and family to hashtag free H-Rap Brown, hashtag free Imam Jamil.
Thank you. No doubt. All right. One more try. Let me see if we got Jamelia with us yet.
I'm here.
All right.
My apologies.
Do we have Sam as well?
No, he's going to be calling back in just a few.
All right.
But I caught the tail end of Tales from the Plantation. So I want to tell you that we are also, so tomorrow I will be joining a few of my sister warriors down in Los Angeles, and we are kicking off Tales from the Plantation from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Federal Courthouse in Los Angeles. And we chose that location because a lot of people don't know that, one, slavery was and still is, in fact, legal in the state of California. But most importantly, the courthouse that we chose is actually sitting on land that was once a slave market in California. And so we thought it was only fitting to kick off Tales from the Plantation on that sacred land.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to being a part of the virtual one tomorrow as well. That's going to be hot. It was a great idea.
We're looking forward to having you come to California, Max. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to having you and Brother Yusuf come and school the people, you know, because a lot of people don't know the hidden history of California. A lot of people think that we are this liberal, you know, forward-moving state, when in fact we were one vote away from becoming a slaveholding state. That the first governor of the state of California was in fact a slaveholder. Once he left his governorship, he then became a Supreme Court justice, even though he was not an attorney and had no legal background. And one of the first cases that he tried was Archie Lee. And Archie Lee was a man who had been brought here from the South by a slaveholder who had made a mass of tremendous amount of wealth for himself, but due to fugitive slave acts in California, once he started acquiring all that money, well, you know how it works. White folks want to come in, confiscate the man's stuff, and return him to slavery. You know, people don't know that San Francisco, we had newspapers there that were putting up articles for, you know, slaves for sale. If you were, you know, $300 for this young black girl, but if you were an abolitionist, you could come and buy her for $100 an hour before the auction starts, you know, and free her. And all of these interesting dynamics that have happened in California. And so I really look forward to you coming and bursting the people's balls.
Well, you know, California is also the home of Radio Man, who was the first person that was sent to prison for life for California's three strike laws. And he went to prison for stealing a car radio as his third strike. Now, you know, this law was put together after everybody went to that fear-mongering stage over the Poly Class event and how an inmate that was released ended up killing this young white girl, I think 11 or 12 years old. But the first person they put in for life was some black guy who was homeless and stole a damn radio in California.
Right. And, you know, going back to Governor Burnett, remember we covered a couple of weeks ago when we had Jordan Schott on the program and we were talking about the lashings of those free blacks who refused to leave Oregon. It was actually called Burnett's Lash Law. It was named after the first governor of California, Peter Burnett.
Well, at this point, though, California looks like they are on the right page with ACA 3. So far, it has continued to pass unanimously through every committee, and we've got one coming up on Friday, or on the 23rd, rather, the Day of Action. And I think that it's going to pass that committee as well. And you said that leaves one stage, Jamilia?
Yes. So once we get through the assembly side, so we've gone through public safety, now we're going through appropriations, then we'll go to the floor for a two-thirds vote, and then we go over to the Senate side. And what's unique about our situation, it's never been done before, I just found out, is that when it was authored, at the time, she was an assembly member, and then she transitioned during a special election and now became a senator. So for the first time in history, we have a bill that's an assembly bill that was authored by an assembly member that is now being carried on both sides of the House. And so when it gets to the Senate side, then she has much more power than she did when it was on the assembly side. So it's just really interesting to, see how this thing is.
That's God's hand working right there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we keep making this history under the radar a lot, over and over again. All right. So I believe
we have one more clip.
Samuel Brown first. We'll play the clip after he's on.
Is he available?
Yeah, she just went to get him right now, so she'll probably be
three-waying
him in. So Samuel Brown is co-author of ACA 3, currently incarcerated, and he's also an activist inside, as well as a brother with several degrees that he's gained. I believe he's been an inmate for over two decades now, and he's about to get released. Let's hope. I don't want to spill too many beans.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm trying to get him. 1 second.
Also an excellent poet as well.
Oh, yeah, excellent poet. Spoken word artist.
Sorry about that, guys. We're having some technical issues. He's going to be calling back here in just a few moments. So I'll be right back.
Well, we didn't know what the circumstance is. He's not using a cell phone. He's using one of them old pay phones that's attached to the wall with a security demanding money every time you pick it up.
Absolutely. So she has to go through the whole approval process, and they have that whole announcement. custom calling features are now allowed and all of that stuff, and then telling how much they're going to, you know, steal from her as the call goes on.
It goes so far beyond just the felony disenfranchisement. That's part of the oppression that we face every day and have been facing now for centuries. But there's so many ways that they get you. Once they get you inside, they extort you. They extort your family. They make you pay these over-inflated prices. They force you to work. They take what little money you do make. They take what little money your family sends in. It's just never-ending. You know, it's a freaking back. Hey, Sam, welcome to Abolition Today again. Welcome back to Abolition Today.
Peace, Max.
Peace, awesome, brother.
Hey, good hearing you again, brother Sam.
We're doing awesome, man, now that you're here.
Brother,
you know?
Same to you.
We were bragging about you and the work that you've been involved in, and as a co-author of ACA3 and the success of that bill. A few words you want to add to that?
Oh, well, first and foremost, all glory be to the Most High, to God, and then to my wife, you know, for giving me this opportunity to be able to here to do this work with you brothers, man. And yeah, I'm very honored to even be a part of the movement with you all, you know. So I thank you for lifting me up and celebrating me, man. But I'm just a cog in the machine, and I'm grateful and honored to be a part of it. And this is how we must function in order to bring about the change we all know we so desperately need. We have to work together from all walks of life. So I'm just honored to do my part, Brother Mac.
Well, you are doing your part in ending slavery in the state of California from inside of a slave plantation while being subject to that duly convicted clause, which takes away both your citizenship and your rights. That is worth talking about. And it sounds easy when you say it, you know what I mean, because all you had to do was stand up and act. But there's so few who are willing to do that. And like we are in today, where people suffer from mass psychosis, they need to see examples like you so they can go outside of that box.
If I could jump in here real quick, Brother Max, yes. I'd like to also say with that comes a great expense. And as you know, we had the Juneteenth event where Samuel was to call in and participate, and something transpired. And if he would be okay with sharing some of that, you know, it's an example of the price that he's constantly paying.
All right.
I don't mind. Thank you for that. And right before I get into that, I want to respond to what you said, Max, and it makes me think about Paulo Freire and the Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And in there, he discussed people who want to assist the oppressed, you know, that come from outside that community, and they tend to take the reins and act as if they know what's best for the people who are actually oppressed. And it's up to us to put forth the solutions and the remedies and do the work that we need to be done. Now, people who want to assist or help, by all means, we need allies, because no man is an island. None of us are islands. You know, there's an independent interdependence by which we function. So none of us are islands. We're all connected to the shared humanity. Nevertheless, it is our responsibility to put forth the solutions to heal our community and our people. You know, like one of my mentors told me, when I got the 10P program approved at the first prison in New Folsom, she said, when they interviewed and asked her why she approved the program when I presented the proposal, she said, because the change is most effective when it comes from the people who are in need of the change. And so I always hold that near and dear to my heart, you know what I mean? And I feel that it's my duty and obligation. So even though I was just playing my part, you highlight something that's very important that people do need to understand. It's up to us to stand up. We cannot always just sit back and wait for the people from the outside to come and assist us. And in regard, because, you know, we got to help people help us, basically. But first, we got to help ourselves. And in regards to the expense that is paid, especially behind these walls, everyone's not a fan.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
This evil, which is called, you know, slavery, and people benefit off it, is so deeply ingrained in the psyche, the psychosis that you were referring to, And some people see it as specifically just a way of life. You got people putting their kids through college. They're paying their mortgage and their house notes. And some of these people barely have, like, a high school diploma. They can't see doing anything else in order to survive. And having a role as an oppressor or overseer on a plantation has given them opportunity to have retirement plans, to take vacations, you know what I mean, to live a life they will otherwise not live because they don't possess the skill set or the knowledge base. And before they see that go away, they rather do any and everything that they can to maintain the status quo. And so I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who benefit from this. This is why they build these prisons in repressed areas. You rarely find any prisons in, like, an urban area or urban community because they know with the prison comes a business boom. And mm-hmm. it's the value of the neighborhood, of the city. So they put these areas where you typically have, poor Caucasian communities or on the border. Like California, you got a couple prisons on the border. But you don't find them in like, the black areas where they boost our local economies and we get elevated federal grants and state grants. And so in here doing this work, some people are opposed to it, and they look at me like I'm trying to threaten their livelihood. So on Juneteenth, you know, you have a lot of people with their deep-seated prejudice and hate and self-hatred. We had an event planned, you know, ASAP, the Abolish Slavery National Network, and we were celebrating Juneteenth, but also ACA3 and the work that we're doing. And I was scheduled to participate and kick off the call. And I showed the flyer to the officers and told them, hey, I got this call coming, man. And long story short, they never opened the door to let me out. The guy made a big old deal out of it, man. They locked me in the cell, treated me poorly, wound up slamming me on the ground, putting his knee on my back, trying to break my arm. Got real disrespectful, told me happy Juneteenth, you know, happy Juneteenth, after they did all this. Made some charges up against me, gave me a resisting with use of force, and I'm like 40 days to the parole board, bro. I'm like, y'all do this to me, you're going to effectively kill me. I'm trying to get home before my mama died. That man said, I don't care about none of that. You know, and it was three of them, and it was like white supremacy at the fullest. So these are the type of repercussions that you can and will incur as a result of doing this work, but it's worth it. We cannot be deterred. I mean, because so many others that came before us and before myself have given their lives for us, so how am I going to lay down and not stand up? I don't know anything else to do. So yeah, I can see people being deterred and scared, but they shouldn't be. That should be a reason to double down and stay the course.
Thank you for your testimony, brother. The emotion that was in Jamelia's voice when I spoke to her on that day, where, like you said, they were trying to kill you over some BS, right? Just because they're feeling themselves and their supremacy. We got another caller that called in, and we've only got a little bit of time left, so I want to get one more person on the line. 4600, you're here on Abolition Today. Who's calling?
Yeah, my name is Pianki. You know, I heard the gentleman making mention of prisons being in urban areas.
Yes.
Well, that they that don't want them there is actually the politicians in those areas. That's the ones that don't want the prisons in those cities. And they use the old terminology, not in my backyard. Being in the St. Louis area, I built several prisons. I worked on seven prisons, but they was out state and not in the area. Matter of fact, the idea of place where it should have been there was the old Pruitt-Igoe spot, but they put something else there.
They build them in rural communities a lot. It's how they put a lot of black people into white communities. And on the census, it says they got X number of minorities there when all their minorities are in prisons.
Well, yeah, that's what they allowed to count them when they in another county, and the count don't go where they came from, which can be used for programs like a community development block grant fund.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You guys are trying to work to have it where prisoners can get their right to vote back, and that's dependent on individual states. But to change the Constitution or amend the Constitution takes 3/4 of the total states in the country, and that's very hard to come about.
Yes, but we are familiar with that. We're almost at that point, though. We've already got over 30 states involved in the abolition movement organized, and we, as I said, we've got 12 more states with legislation already on the table, in addition to the three that have abolished it and the two that are on the ballot right now. So it's happening.
Yeah,
we're
well, those
states'
constitutions, I'm talking about the U.S. Constitution. Let's see what happens. And
yeah, we
work hard.
We have a federal amendment, joint federal amendment, that's been introduced by mm-hmm. Representative Nikema Williams and Senator Merkley of Oregon. And they've already introduced it. We've got the support coming for it. I think I don't want to quote a number of how many senators have signed on to it, but it's got quite a bit of co-sponsors now. And as we work with the individual states to get them to amend their constitutions, we're also building the necessary relationships so that we can get that three-quarters vote.
Yeah, that requires the state legislature to ratify. Then they take it to the federal government
yes.
for the senators if they
right.
choose. All right, anyway, you guys carry on. Good luck.
Thank you very
Thanks
much
for your
call, man. We appreciate you. All right, back to Brother Sam. I know that you are on literally borrowed time. So
we lost him. We lost him.
We lost
they literally shut the phone. They shut the phone off on him.
See, you know, it ain't easy.
That's
being
how
in
it goes.
So, everything
for the listeners who, yeah, for the listeners who missed our season finale last year on November 22nd.
All right.
Okay. We just want to direct everyone to November 22nd, 2020, Season 1, Episode 37, where we had a full episode with Jamelia and Brother Sam on. So I encourage you all to go listen to that so you can hear about his 10P program and other things that he's done during his incarceration and the movements that they're making, part of which we're discussing this evening. Max?
Well, I think what we'll do now is go ahead and cover this last clip that we have. And that'll give Jamelia time to reconnect again with Sam, and
sure.
we'll get edumacated. This is Senator Cory Booker speaking on the dangers of felony disenfranchisement, and that's going to be followed by Janae Aiko with a song called Vote. You're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org, with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan. Today, we're talking about voter disenfranchisement. We'll be right back.
Abolition.
What shocks people, what they don't understand, though, the biggest threat to African-American voting, and I think that just voting, period, right now, is felony disenfranchisement. And so here you have blacks in America are four times more likely to have lost their voting rights than whites because of previous conviction. Now think about this. And the overwhelmingly our increase in incarceration, 800% increase in incarceration since 1980 at the federal level, 500% increase in our incarceration rates. This is how much our incarceration rates have mushroomed nationally, 500%. We now have 5% of the globe's population. One out of every four people on the planet Earth is imprisoned is here in America, disproportionately poor, disproportionately minority. So get this. Blacks are about four times more likely to lose their voting rights. You have some states, Virginia, Florida, where one in five African Americans has lost their right to vote because of previous incarceration.
And these happen to be two very key, important swing states
right.
in every national election.
That's what
Virginia,
I'm saying.
Virginia, Florida.
Right.
Yeah.
So you take off the table all these African Americans. Some counties, by the way, it's upwards in of one in three African Americans. And so the one point I want to make is then you go to, well, maybe this is just black people doing crimes. Well, think about this for a second. There is no difference in America between blacks and whites for using drugs or selling drugs. In fact, young and Latinos, by the way, all of us Americans, one in 10 Americans is going to break a drug law today. The last two presidents admitted to felonies breaking drug laws, okay? And yet... young white men have a little higher rates of dealing drugs than young black men, but yet African Americans will be almost four times more likely to be arrested for breaking those crimes than someone white. So just remember those two things I said. You're four times more likely to lose your voting rights and four times more likely almost to be arrested for drugs. So to me, this is a systematic undermining of what I think are sacred bedrock principles of citizenship. And if you do that, if you persecute the drug war disproportionately against poor, disproportionately in minorities, you're disenfranchising them at greater rates. This is one of the more undemocratic periods of American history, where millions of Americans now are being stripped of their voting rights.
So what can a U.S. senator do? Because most voting laws, quite candidly, are based on state action. What can a U.S. senator do?
Well, number one, that we're pushing for legislation to change this on the federal level. So I can advocate for legislation that preempts those state laws. And I can hopefully be a part of a movement. You know, what's the old saying? I forget, one of the great activists that said that the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. I think a lot of people need to be angry and understand what's happening in America with this drug war, which is not a war on drugs. It's a war on people, and not all people, disproportionately poor people, disproportionately mentally ill people, disproportionately transgender people, disproportionately minorities.
And it's ironic.
Yeah, I just wanna focus on my hope. I ain't got no time, I gotta work. Yeah, rent is coming up, I need this cash. I got a couple terminations in my past, yeah. Gotta ask my boss that's for a day off. But if I do, I know I might get laid off. I just wanna focus on my hope. I just wanna focus on my hope, yeah. Cause now I'm opening up, but I ain't also many things was gonna hold me up. Wanted to rock the vault when I was growing up. Now they hit the re-rock, gotta slow me up. I just wanna get to the ballot, I just wanna feel like I'm valid. Put in my vote, I can have it, but that shouldn't feel like magic. It's the best way to make my voice heard, and that should be automatic. That's my American right, I'm flexing my right if I got it. Got it, I got it. Yeah, I just wanna focus on my vote. I got no time, I gotta work. Yeah, rent is coming up, I need this cash. I got a couple terminations in my past, yeah. Gotta ask my boss that for a day off. But if I do, I know I might get laid off. I just wanna focus on my goals. I just wanna focus on my goals. I just wanna focus on my goals. I just wanna focus on my vote.
Abolition. Abolition. Abolition.
That was Senator Cory Booker speaking on the danger of felony disenfranchisement, and that was followed by Janae Echo, a song called Vote. Just checking to see if we have Jamelia and Sam back on the line. Okay, so it looks like we don't have the Max.
He pointed out, Senator Booker pointed out some pretty powerful stats that, you know, we're already aware of, but I wish other people would absorb and understand the implications of that. You know, we don't have the type of numbers that the majority has. We don't have that. There's only 47 million people, black people or African-American descent in this country, only 47 million of them, and half of them are children. You know, so that leaves 23 million or so people, and half of those are men and half of those are women. So it's 12 million of each. And you got a million of the men in the prisons. You got another couple million in the jails. You got another few million on probation and parole. Then you got another 7 or 8 million who can't vote. Do you see the problem here? It's not 250 million of us. There's only 47 million. You see?
Hey, you're really hitting it. And before we go off the air, I just want to tell you that we have a new fan of the program, and it's my mom. She's been texting me throughout the show, and she's just really loving, especially the last track that we just had on with Senator Booker and the song Vote. She really enjoyed that. So shout out to you, Mom.
Shout out to Mom. That's the best fan you could possibly have.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, when I'm gone from this world, if my wife and kids and family remember me, that'd be, for me, success. You know what I mean? That'd be a success. But anyway, man, yeah, there were some very powerful statements that Cory Booker made in there saying, you know, 1 in 5 black men in places like, you know, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama can't vote. Some counties, it's 1 in 3. And I bet you if you go to places like Milwaukee County, it's probably 1 in 2 or more than 1 in 2 who can't vote.
Right.
You're talking about more than 50% of the men, black men in this freaking county can't vote. And this is all stemming from the 13th Amendment and how it used civil death as a weapon in order to suppress the African-American political power, it's really, or any minority's political power, so that they can dominate all aspects of government like they dominate all aspects of everything else. I'm still waiting to see a black governor's ball. I want to see that before I die.
And it's great. You know, I also want to shout out LeBron James. He gets a lot of hate because, you know, that's just what people do in sports. But when it comes to his political activism, you know, I think of his organization that he started with other athletes called More Than a Vote, and how when they first were going to allow voting after incarceration in Florida, then DeSantis went along and said, well, they got to pay off all their fines first. And then LeBron's organization went and they started paying off all of these fines for people so they can have the ability to vote. So that just shows that there are those out there that take this very seriously, because as Jamelia was speaking about earlier, on the local level, there's so much that goes on that we don't get involved in when it's talking about school board, that determines the curriculum that's taught in school, that's taught, that determines how much school taxes you pay. Then it comes to just something as simple as whether or not you have a stop sign or a speed bump on your block or a traffic light, your property taxes, who's going to be the sheriff, who's going to be the judges. See, all of these things matter in your voting. So when you say, well, my vote doesn't count, or what is voting going to do? Well, it's going to affect your life every single day. So that's why it's important to vote, and that's why we talk about felony disenfranchisement and how all these tricks are being done to take that right to vote away from us, because we know that they can suspend your license for unpaid fines, and you can become incarcerated for unpaid fines. And the minute you go in, you know, you no longer have your right to vote. So that's why it's important.
You know, I don't trust the government any further than I can throw it. And the cesspool that we call politics is something I never wanted to touch in my life, and I still am not feeling it in any way, shape, or form. But I have an opportunity here, along with the rest of this generation, to be great. Every now and then, a generation gets called on, and they get an opportunity to be great. And we can be great in this generation simply by ending slavery, something even our ancestors was not able to accomplish. And the window of opportunity is here, and it's now. And if you think that is just some kind of a symbol, symbology, or it has no meat to it, you couldn't be any further from the truth. Imagine it like this. It's a doorway that has never been opened before with an entire universe behind it. And if we open that door, it's going to, how did that Louisiana senator say it? It's going to open up a can of worms, right? It's going
to
open up a
can of worms. And that's what we're trying to do.
Because
we want these worms crawling all over the place.
Yep. They've been practicing legalized, constitutionally codified slavery since 1865 in this fashion. And the new part of it now is, of course, warehousing bodies. So, yes, this will create opportunities that have never existed before. We won't have to worry about if we sue like Colorado has done for slave labor because they're getting paid 10 cents an hour to work like dogs with no rights and no benefits. If we sue, the court can't say, it says it right here in the 13th Amendment, involuntary servitude, so case dismissed. You know,
exactly.
That's going to be the end of that. And now you've got to
justify why you're using slavery. So, Max, we're up against our hard
slavery.
I was going to say our hard stop. So I just want to get in our closing comments, our sponsors and partners, Jailhouse
right.
Lawyers Speak, the
IMW,
Ubuntu Prison Advocacy Network.
Before we do that, I think we got Jamelia back on. Let's just get a few closing words from her. Jamelia, you there?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, 4711. Who is that?
That's Jamelia.
You might be.
That was our hand up from earlier.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, sorry about that. So, yeah, thank you for our callers today, for joining us, and for you for listening, and you, brothers, for being here with me. Peace. We'll be live on location in California next week when you hear us again. Yusuf?
Well, thank you for that, Max. Again, we thank our sponsors, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, the IMWE Ubuntu Prison Advocacy Network, Sema Urge, Quakers Uplifting Racial Justice, the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center, Prismatic Dreams, and the Black Talk Radio Network. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/abolitiontoday, for the page for all information, news, and music you hear on this program. Also, remember to tune into all major podcast platforms with simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. Also, remember to join the movement at abolishslavery.us and intheexception.com to become part of the solution. Don't forget about the Shut 'Em Down 2021 movement. Our final segment in Bridging the Gap, Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, The Vote. This was a PBS special, and that'll be followed by the song Scared of Us by KOTI, Joyner Lucas, PBD Gray, and Jay Morris. We'll be back next Sunday, August 29th, God willing, broadcasting live from Sacramento, California, with another masterclass on slavery abolition. So until next week, think about abolition today. Peace.
Abolition. Abolition. Today.
The first state in what came to be known as the suffrage column was Wyoming, which joined the Union in 1890 with its women already fully enfranchised. It was followed over the next 6 years by three more Western states. Then the forward march stalled.
By the late 19th century, in white middle-class and upper-class American society, there was a shrinking faith in democracy. In the North, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, democracy is not an unalloyed blessing. We have all of these immigrants coming in. They don't speak English. They're not very smart. I don't think we should let them vote. In the South, of course, politicians were busy disenfranchising African Americans who had been enfranchised during Reconstruction.
The 15th Amendment didn't say people have the right to vote regardless of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. It said states can't deny people the right to vote. And Southern states realized, well, they wouldn't deny the right to vote by race. They deny it if your grandfather was a slave. That's not specified in the 15th Amendment.
So the dominant movement is to take voting rights away from people, and that is something which the women's suffrage movement runs up against at the end of the century.
As states across the South move to bar black men from voting by means of grandfather clauses, literacy tests, poll taxes, and brute force, the National Association, with Susan B. Anthony's assent, adapted to the prevailing mood. African American women who had been prominent in the movement were sidelined, and Southern chapters permitted to refuse black members. In 1894, Anthony even went so far as to ask Frederick Douglass to keep away from a suffrage convention in Atlanta for fear of alienating potential supporters.
Frederick Douglass is the one who stands up and says to women who are ambivalent about calling for the vote, well, you must work for suffrage. So to say to him that he's not welcome in the South in Atlanta is a terrible thing. And Anthony probably actually believed that, as she said, when we get the vote, when white women get the vote, we'll make everything okay for everybody. But it certainly encouraged the continuing segregation and discrimination.
African American women are going to continue to work toward women's rights. They're interested in the vote. But they are also using those ideas to transform and control their institutions.
in churches, in fraternal orders, in benevolent societies. They're going to build, by the 1890s, an African-American women's club movement. And within that, they are also going to be claiming women's rights in their own terms. These are sisters who are divided because of racism and because of white supremacy, and they're asking each other to concede on the issue of rights. And it will impact every single attempt to bring women broadly together in action for a better society.
Cocaine to the same people that you locked up, gave a license, did the whole thing. That what the plan was the whole time. Lie, keep a nigga with a closed eye. Celebrating your holiday, pray to your God, cause you stole mine. Kill a nigga when they whistling at your women when you come and rape mine. Tan down eye hero, you do the same thing, but you keep yo. Quit to hit a nigga with the Rico, see the bullshit through the peephole. Bust it up to the death, listen, shout it, all we got is IG code. But stand up and get rolled over, hit the front line, let him go, soldier. How your partner, this a shooter, huh? How your nigga wanna kill son? Shoot a G-key, shoot a 6-9, but do a damn thing to George Zimmerman. Okay, and all these black women come up missing. What the fuck is all the real niggas? Well, how you niggas shooting in the club? Get your hard ass in the field, nigga. Okay, I be damned if I won't bust my wrist, my life, take my time. No, you niggas ain't revolution ready. I ain't even finna waste my time.
They scared of us, they scared of us, they scared of us. Got another shot fire. They scared of us, they scared of us, they scared of us. If we ever get united, trouble.
Call the White House to talk to somebody about a forecast on life. No sunny days, man, the bench is cloudy. No need to be alarmed, get rowdy. Call for backup, cops double up. No project with the keepers in the hood. In other words, blind is covered up. Not exposed to what we could have. Got me irate, man, and I hate how the knowledge that we lack got us taken back to a slave-driven mind state. Willie Lynch is decrypted from the playbook that is scripted from. Brother say he'll die for a neighborhood that his mama just got evicted from. Another name is the cop's flame. Better lay low when it's close to dark. They bust at me, threw the cuffs at me, I boycotted the bus like I was Rosa Parks. You say you wouldn't join the military, but you trapping hard, so you might as well. Another agent for the government when you in the hood serving clientele. Think about it, we in the hood trapping and loving it. The same way a soldier representing the government. Soldiers supply with the weapons and training. The same way we all with the government slang. Gotta wake up, it's time, people. Everybody get in line, people. Cause the system played us, you can't see it like I'm in a world full of blind people.
Back when I used to play Simon Says, I never listened to a thing my mama said. Would a thing for myself, so I pretend. Do I wanna be rich? Well, it depends. I mean, I could be rich like Hov and Puff. I could be rich like Warren Buff. I could flip bricks and all them drugs. That's more trouble for all of us. Sometimes I be thinking hard too much. Like with a triple X, it's hard to touch. With a rose, I never caught the bus. What if more parents was hard enough? And look, what if Kaepernick wasn't all black?
All black.
And what if Trayvon and Zimmerman never crossed paths? What if Malcolm may have a dark past? What if Sean Bell never got engaged? What if Donald Trump never got his way? What if Dr. King, I have a lot to say? Make way for penalties, AKA they're killing me. The KKK got denim sheets. Niggas can't even nail a piece. Niggas can't wait to get at me. Niggas can't wait to finish me. Throw dirt on my name and spit at me. They shoot me and stay finicky. I gotta pray for my enemies.
Trouble!
truth. And when they seen pyramids, we were through. They drew up a scheme to wipe us out clean. They seen all that greatness and never recoup. Condition our minds to believe that we left the human with a book to recite to the youth. Manipulation got us tight in the noose. Every day we see it right in the news. Blasphemy that you'll blaspheme if I smash your sneaks and be a casualty. But won't flash the heat when the crack is beat. Your black ass asleep, you wanna ask for peace and then crash the streets. Strapped with the gasoline, burning shit down to an ash and lead. Protest bad words if you're asking me. But when the party's over and your ass a lead, the cops still kill a nigga before the night's done. Careless if they shot the right one. We did record and let the lights run. All the images we seeing, they got it inside sun. White stuntin' on the ground with all the nice guns. Pull up with the shit, you got the light one. All these oppressors got the strike one. What we gon' do? Fight or run our mouths, nigga.
No justice, no peace on these streets. Can you hear the babies crying?
You're
crying,
welcome.
Crying.
Abolition. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today.